fantasized about the airy spaces behind the walls of the university, where well-prepared students and old sages discussed Plato and Kepler all day, listened to him spellbound, saying only, "How clever you are." And as soon as the moment seemed apt, I volubly, if somewhat inanely, praised his article in Cronache Meridionali. He listened to me seriously, without interrupting, so that, at a certain point, I no longer knew what to say to show him that I knew his text thoroughly. Finally, he seemed content. He explained that not even Professor Galliani, not even Armando, not even Nadia had read it with such attention. And he started to talk to me about other essays he had in mind on the same subject. I stood listening to him in the doorway of the bookshop, pretending not to hear the owner calling me. After a shout that was sharper than the others, Nino muttered, "What does that shit want?" He stayed a little longer, with his insolent expression, and, saying that he was leaving for Ischia the next day, held out his hand to me. I shook it. It was slender, delicate, and he immediately drew me toward him, just slightly, leaned over, brushed my lips with his. It was a moment. Then he left me with a light gesture, a caress on the palm with his fingers, and went off toward the Retifilo. I stood watching as he walked away without turning, walked like a distracted chieftain who feared nothing in the world because the world existed only to submit to him. That night, I didn't close my eyes. In the morning, I got up early. I hurried to the new grocery. I found Leela just as she was pulling up the gate. Carmen hadn't yet arrived. I said nothing about Nino. I said only, in the tone of someone who is asking the impossible and knows it, "If you go to Ischia instead of Torre Annunziata, I'll quit and come with you." 41. We disembarked on the island the second Sunday in July. Stefano and Leela, Rino and Pinuccia, Nunzia and I. The two men, loaded down with bags, were apprehensive, like ancient heroes in an unknown land, uneasy without the armor of their cars, unhappy that they had had to rise early and forego the neighborhood leisureliness of their day off. The wives, dressed in their Sunday best, were annoyed with them, but in different ways. Pinuccia, because Rino was too encumbered to pay attention to her. Leela, because Stefano pretended to know what he was doing and where he was going when it was clear that he didn't. As for Nunzia, she had the appearance of someone who feels that she is being tolerated, and she was careful not to say anything inappropriate that might annoy the young people. The only one who was truly content was me, with a bag over my shoulder that held my few things, excited by the smells of Ischia, the sounds, the colors that, as soon as I got off the boat, corresponded precisely to the memories of that earlier vacation. We arranged ourselves in two minicabs, jammed in bodies, sweat, luggage. The house, rented in a hurry with the help of a salumi supplier of Ischian origin, was on the road that led to a place called Quoto. It was a simple structure and belonged to a cousin of the supplier, a thin woman, over 60, unmarried, who greeted us with brusque efficiency. Stefano and Rino dragged the suitcases up a narrow staircase, joking, but also cursing because of the effort. The owner led us into shadowy rooms stuffed with sacred images and small glowing lamps. But when we opened the windows, we saw, beyond the road, beyond the vineyards, beyond the palms and pine trees, a long strip of the sea. Or, rather, the bedrooms that Pinucha and Leela took, after some friction of the yours-is-bigger-no-yours-is-bigger type, faced the sea. While the room that fell to Nunzia had a sort of porthole, high up, so that we never discovered what was outside it. And mine, which was very small and barely had space for the bed, looked out on a chicken coop sheltered by a forest of reeds. There was nothing to eat in the house. On the advice of the owner, we went to a trattoria, which was dark and had no other customers. We sat down dubiously, just to get fed. But in the end, even Nunzia, who was distrustful of all cooking that was not her own, found that it was good and wanted to take something home so that she could prepare dinner that evening. Stefano didn't make the slightest move to ask for the check, and after a mute hesitation, Reno resigned himself to paying for everyone. At that point, we girls proposed going to the beach, but the two men resisted, yawned, said they were tired. We insisted, especially Leela. "We ate too much," she said. "It'll do us good to walk. The beach is right here. Do you feel like it, Mama?" Nunzia sided with the men, and we returned to the house. After a bored stroll through the rooms, both Stefano and Reno, almost in unison, said that they wanted to have a little nap. They laughed, whispered to each other, laughed again, and then nodded at their wives, who followed them unwillingly into the bedrooms. Nunzia and I remained alone for a couple of hours. We inspected the state of the kitchen and found it dirty, which led Nunzia to start washing everything carefully. Plates, glasses, silverware, pots. It was a struggle to get her to let me help. She asked me to keep track of a number of urgent requests for the owner, and when she herself lost count of the things that were needed, she marveled that I was able to remember everything, saying, "That's why you're so clever at school." Finally, the two couples reappeared. First, Stefano and Leela, then Reno and Pinucha. I again proposed going to see the beach, but there was coffee, joking, chatting, and Nunzia, who began to cook, and Pinucha, who was clinging to Reno, making him feel her stomach, murmuring, "Stay, leave tomorrow morning." And so the time flew, and yet again we did nothing. In the end, the men had to rush, afraid of missing the ferry, and cursing because they hadn't brought their cars, had to find someone to take them to the port. They disappeared almost without saying goodbye. Pinucha burst into tears. In silence, we girls began to unpack the bags, to arrange our things, while Nunzia insisted on making the bathroom shine. Only when we were sure that the men had not missed the ferry and would not return did we relax, begin to joke. We had ahead of us a long week and only ourselves to worry about. Pinucha said she was afraid of being alone in her room. There was an image of a grieving Madonna with knives in her heart that sparkled in the lamplight, and went to sleep with Leela. I shut myself in my little room to enjoy my secret. Nino was in Forio, not far away, and maybe even the next day I would meet him on the beach. I felt wild, reckless, but I was glad about it. There was a part of me that was sick of being a sensible person. It was hot. I opened the window. I listened to the chickens pecking, the rustle of the reeds. Then I became aware of the mosquitoes. I closed the window quickly and spent at least an hour going after them and crushing them with one of the books that Professor Galliani had lent me, Complete Plays by a writer named Samuel Beckett. I didn't want Nino to see me on the beach with red spots on my face and body. I didn't want him to catch me with a book of plays. For one thing, I had never set foot in a theater. I put aside Beckett, stained by the black or bloody silhouettes of the mosquitoes, and began to read a very complicated text on the idea of nationhood. I fell asleep reading. 42. In the morning, Nunzia, who felt committed to looking after us, went in search of a place to do the shopping, and we headed to the beach. The beach of Chitara, which for that entire long vacation we thought was called Chetara. What pretty bathing suits Leela and Pinucha displayed when they took off their sundresses. One piece, of course. The husbands, who as fiancés had been indulgent, especially Stefano, now were against the two-piece. But the colors of the new fabrics were shiny, and the shape of the neckline, front and back, ran elegantly over their skin. I, under an old, long-sleeved blue dress, wore the same faded bathing suit, now shapeless, that Nella Incardo had made for me years earlier at Burano. I undressed reluctantly. We walked a long way in the sun until we saw steam rising from some thermal baths, then turned back. Pinucha and I stopped often to swim. Leela didn't, although she was there for that purpose. Of course, there was no Nino, and I was disappointed. I had been convinced that he would show up, as if by a miracle. When the other two wanted to go back to the house, I stayed on the beach and walked along the shore toward Forio. That night, I was so sunburned that I felt I had a high fever. The skin on my shoulders blistered, and for the next few days I had to stay in the house. I cleaned, cooked, and read, and my energy pleased Nunzia, who couldn't stop praising me. Every night, with the excuse that I had been in the house all day to stay out of the sun, I made Leela and Pina walk to Forio, which was some distance away. We wandered through the town, had some ice cream. "It's pretty here," Pinucha complained. "It's a morgue where we are." But for me, Forio was also a morgue. Nino did not appear. Toward the end of the week, I proposed to Leela that we should visit Burano and the Maranti. Leela agreed enthusiastically, and Pinucha didn't want to stay and be bored with Nunzia. We left early. Under our dresses, we wore our bathing suits, and in a bag, I carried our towels, sandwiches, a bottle of water. My stated purpose was to take advantage of that trip to say hello to Nella, Maestra Oliviero's cousin, whom I had stayed with during my summer on Ischia. The secret plan, instead, was to see the Saratore family and get from Marisa the address of the friend with whom Nino was staying in Forio. I was naturally afraid of running into the father, Donato, but I hoped that he was at work, and, in order to see the son, I was ready to run the risk of having to endure some obscene remark from him. When Nella opened the door and I stood before her like a ghost, she was stunned. Tears came to her eyes. "It's happiness," she said, apologizing. But it wasn't only that. I had reminded her of her cousin, who, she told me, wasn't comfortable in Potenza, was ill, and wasn't getting better. She led us out to the terrace, offered us whatever we wanted, was very concerned with Pinucha and her pregnancy. She made her sit down, wanted to touch her stomach, which protruded a little. Meanwhile, I made Leela go on a sort of pilgrimage. I showed her the corner of the terrace where I had spent so much time in the sun, the place where I sat at the table, the corner where I made my bed at night. For a fraction of a second, I saw Donato leaning over me as he slid his hand under the sheets, touched me. I felt revulsion, but this didn't keep me from asking Nella casually, "And the Saratores?" "They're at the beach." How's it going this year? Ah, well. They're too demanding?
Ever since he became more the journalist than the railroad worker, yes.
Is he here?
He's on sick leave.
And is Marisa here?
No, not Marisa. But except for her, they're all here.
All?
You understand.
No, I swear, I don't understand anything. She laughed heartily.
Nino's here today too, Lenu. When he needs money, he shows up for half a day. Then he goes back to stay with a friend who has a house in Forio.
43. We left Nella and went down to the beach with our things. Leela teased me mildly the whole way. You're sneaky, she said. You made me come to Ischia just because Nino's here. Admit it.
I wouldn't admit it. I defended myself.
Then Panucha joined her sister-in-law in a coarser tone and accused me of having compelled her to make a long and tiring journey to Burano for my own purposes, without taking her pregnancy into account. From then on, I denied it even more firmly, and in fact, I threatened them both. I promised that if they said anything improper in the presence of the Saratores, I would take the boat and return to Naples that night. I immediately picked out the family. They were in exactly the same place where they used to settle years before, and had the same umbrella, the same bathing suits, the same bags, the same way of basking in the sun. Donato, belly up in the black sand, leaning on his elbows. His wife, Lydia, sitting on a towel and leafing through a magazine. To my great disappointment, Nino wasn't under the umbrella. I scanned the water and glimpsed a dark dot that appeared and disappeared on the rocking surface of the sea. I hoped it was him. Then I announced myself, calling aloud to Pino, Clelia, and Ciro, who were playing on the shore. Ciro had grown, he didn't recognize me, and smiled uncertainly. Pino and Clelia ran toward me excitedly, and the parents turned to look, out of curiosity.
Lydia jumped up, shouting my name and waving.
Saratore hurried toward me, with a big welcoming smile and open arms. I avoided his embrace, saying only, "Hello, how are you?" They were very friendly. I introduced Leela and Panucha, mentioned their parents, said whom they had married. Donato immediately focused on the two girls. He began addressing them respectfully as Signora Caracci and Signora Cerullo. He remembered them as children, he began, with fatuous elaboration, to speak of time's flight.
I talked to Lydia, asked politely about the children, and especially Marisa.
Pino, Clelia, and Ciro were doing well, and it was obvious. They immediately gathered around me, waiting for the right moment to draw me into their games. As for Marisa, her mother said that she had stayed in Naples with her aunt and uncle. She had to retake exams in 4 subjects in September and had to go to private lessons. "Serves her right," she said darkly. "She didn't work all year. Now she deserves to suffer." I said nothing, but I doubted that Marisa was suffering. She would spend the whole summer with Alfonso in the store in Piazza dei Martiri, and I was happy for her.
I noticed instead that Lydia bore deep traces of grief
in her face, which was losing its contours, in her eyes, in her shrunken breast, in her heavy stomach. All the time we talked, she was glancing fearfully at her husband, who, playing the role of the kindly man, was devoting himself to Leela and Panucha. She stopped paying attention to me and kept her eyes glued to him when he offered to take them swimming,
promising Leela that he would teach her to swim.
"I taught all my children," we heard him say. "I'll teach you too."
I never asked about Nino, nor did Lydia ever mention him.
But now the black dot in the sparkling blue of the sea stopped moving out. It reversed direction, grew larger. I began to distinguish the white of the foam exploding beside it. Yes, it's him, I thought anxiously. Nino emerged from the water, looking with curiosity at his father, who was holding Leela afloat with one arm, and with the other was showing her what to do. Even when he saw me and recognized me, he continued to frown.
"What are you doing here?"
he asked. "I'm on vacation," I answered, "and I came by to see Signora Nella." He looked again with annoyance in the direction of his father and the two girls.
"Isn't that Lena?"
"Yes, and that's her sister-in-law, Pinuccia. I don't know if you remember her." He rubbed his hair with a towel, continuing to stare at the three in the water. I told him, almost breathlessly, that we would be staying on Ischia until September, that we had a house not far from Forio, that Leela's mother was there, too, that on Sunday the husbands of Leela and Pinuccia would come. As I spoke, it seemed to me that he wasn't even listening.
But still I said, and in spite of Lydia's presence, that on the weekend I had nothing to do.
"Come see us," he said, and then he spoke to his mother. "I have to go."
"Already?"
"I have things to do."
"Elena's here." Nino looked at me as if he had become aware of my presence only then. He rummaged in his shirt, which was hanging on the umbrella, took out a pencil and a notebook, wrote something, tore out the page, and handed it to me.
"I'm at this address," he said,
clear, decisive as a movie actor. I took the page as if it were a holy relic.
"Eat something first," his mother begged him.
He didn't answer. "And at least wave goodbye to Papa." He changed out of his bathing suit, wrapping a towel around his waist, and went off along the shore without saying goodbye to anyone.
44. We spent the entire day at the Miranti, I playing and swimming with the children, Pinuccia and Leela completely occupied by Donato, who took them for a walk all the way to the thermal baths. At the end, Pinuccia was exhausted, and Saratore showed us a convenient and pleasant way of going home. We went to a hotel that was built practically over the water, as if on stilts. And there, for a few lire, we got a boat, entrusting ourselves to an old sailor. As soon as we sat out, Leela said sarcastically, "Nino didn't give you much encouragement. He had to study. And he couldn't even say hello."
"That's how he is."
"How he is rude," Pinuccia interjected. "He's as rude as the father is nice." They were both convinced that Nino hadn't been polite or pleasant, and I let them think it. I preferred prudently to keep my secrets. And it seemed to me that if they thought he was disdainful of even a really good student like me, they would more easily put up with the fact that he had ignored them, and maybe they would even forgive him. I wanted to protect him from their rancor, and I succeeded. They seemed to forget about him right away. Pinuccia was enthusiastic about Salvatore's graciousness, and Leela said with satisfaction, "He taught me to float, and even how to swim. He's great." The sun was setting. I thought of Donato's molestations and shuddered. From the violet sky came a chilly dampness. I said to Leela, "He's the one who wrote that the panel in the Piazza dei Martiri shop was ugly."
Pinucha had a smug expression of agreement.
Leela said, "He was right." I became upset. "And he's the one who ruined Melina."
Leela answered, with a laugh, "Or maybe he made her feel good for once."
That remark wounded me. I knew what Melina had endured, what her children endured. I also knew Lydia's sufferings, and how Saratore, behind his fine manners, hid a desire that respected nothing and no one. Nor had I forgotten that Leela, since she was a child, had witnessed the torments of the widow Capuccio, and how painful it had been for her. So what was this tone? What were those words? A signal to me? Did she want to say to me, "You're a girl, you don't know anything about a woman's needs"? I abruptly changed my mind about the secrecy of my secrets. I wanted immediately to show that I was a woman like them and knew.
Nino gave me his address, I said to Leela. If you don't mind, when Stefano and Rino come, I'm going to see him.
Address. Go see him. Bold formulations.
Leela narrowed her eyes. A sharp line crossed her forehead. Pinucha had a malicious look. She touched Leela's knee. She laughed.
You hear? Lenucha has a date tomorrow, and she has the address.
I flushed. Well, if you're with your husbands, what am I supposed to do?
For a long moment, there was only the noise of the engine and the mute presence of the sailor at the helm.
Leela said coldly, "Keep Mama company. I didn't bring you here to have fun."
I restrained myself. We had had a week of freedom. That day, besides, both she and Pinucha, on the beach, in the sun, during long swims, and thanks to the words that Saratore knew how to use to inspire laughter and to charm, had forgotten themselves. Donato had made them feel like girl women in the care of an unusual father, the rare father who doesn't punish you, but encourages you to express your desires without guilt. And now that the day was over, I, in declaring that I would have a Sunday to myself with a university student, what was I doing? Was I reminding them both that that week in which their condition as wives was suspended was over, and that their husbands were about to reappear? Yes, I had overdone it. Cut out your tongue, I thought.
45. The husbands, in fact, arrived early. They were expected Sunday morning, but they appeared Saturday evening, very excited, with Lambrettas that they had, I think, rented at the Ischia port. Nunzia prepared a lavish dinner. There was talk of the neighborhood, of the stores, of how the new shoes were coming along. Rino was full of self-praise for the models that he was perfecting with his father. But at an opportune moment, he thrust some sketches under Leela's nose, and she examined them reluctantly, suggesting some modifications. Then we sat down at the table, and the two young men gorged themselves, competing to see who could eat more. It wasn't even 10 when they dragged their wives to the bedrooms. I helped Nunzia clear and wash the dishes. Then I shut myself in my room. I read a little. The heat in the closed room was suffocating, but I was afraid of the blotches I'd get from the mosquito bites, and I didn't open the window. I tossed and turned in the bed, soaked with sweat. I thought of Leela, of how, slowly, she had yielded. Certainly, she didn't show any particular affection for her husband, and the tenderness that I had sometimes seen in her gestures when they were engaged had disappeared. During dinner, she had frequently commented with disgust at the way Stefano gobbled his food, the way he drank. But it was evident that some equilibrium, who knows how precarious, had been reached. When he, after some elusive remarks, headed toward the bedroom, Leela followed without delay. Without saying, "Go on, I'll join you later." She was resigned to an inevitable routine. Between her and her husband, there was not the carnival spirit displayed by Reno and Pinucha, but there was no resistance either. Deep into the night, I heard the noise of the two couples, the laughter and the sighs, the doors opening, the water coming out of the tap, the whirlpool of the flush, the doors closing. Finally, I fell asleep. On Sunday, I had breakfast with Nunzia. I waited until 10 for any of them to emerge. They didn't. I went to the beach. I stayed until noon, and no one came. I went back to the house. Nunzia told me that the two couples had gone for a tour of the island on the Lembretas, advising us not to wait for them for lunch. In fact, they returned around 3, slightly drunk, sunburned, all 4 full of enthusiasm for Casa Michola, Lacco Ameno, Forio. The two girls had shining eyes and immediately glanced at me slyly. "Lenu," Pinucha almost shouted. "Guess what happened?"
"What?"
"We met Nino on the beach," Leela said. My heart stopped.
"Oh."
"My goodness, he is really a good swimmer," Pinucha said excitedly, cutting the air with exaggerated arm strokes. "And Reno,
he's not unlikable. He was interested in how shoes are made."
"And Stefano,
he has a friend named Socavo, and he's the Mortadella Socavo. His father owns a sausage factory in San Giovanni a Tiduccio."
"And Reno again.
That guy's got money."
"And again Stefano.
Forget the student, Lenu. He doesn't have a lira. Aim for Socavo. You'd be better off."
After a little more joking, "Would you look at that? Lenucha is about to be the richest of all. She seems like a good girl, and yet..." They withdrew again into the bedrooms. I was incredibly disappointed. They had met Nino, gone swimming with him, talked to him, and without me. I put on my best dress, the same one, the one I'd worn to the wedding, even though it was hot. I carefully combed my hair, which had become very blonde in the sun, and told Nunzia I was going for a walk. I walked to Forio, uneasy because of the long solitary distance, because of the heat, because of the uncertain result of my undertaking. I tracked down the address of Nino's friend. I called several times from the street, fearful that he wouldn't answer. "Nino! Nino!" He looked out. "Come up.
I'll wait here."
I waited. I was afraid that he would treat me rudely. Instead, he came out of the doorway with an unusually friendly expression. How disturbing his angular face was, and how pleasantly crushed I felt, confronted by his long profile, his broad shoulders and narrow chest, that taut skin, the sole dark coverings of his thinness, merely bones, muscles, tendons. He said his friend would join us later. We walked through the center of Forio, amid the Sunday market stalls. He asked me about the bookstore on Mezzocanone. I told him that Leela had asked me to go with her on vacation, and so I had quit. I didn't mention the fact that she was giving me money, as if going with her were a job, as if I were her employee. I asked him about Nadia. He said only, "Everything's fine." "Do you write to each other?"
"Yes."
"Every day?"
"Every week."
That was our conversation. Already we had nothing more of ourselves to share. We don't know anything about each other, I thought. Maybe I could ask how relations are with his father, but in what tone? And besides, didn't I see with my own eyes that they're bad? Silence. I felt awkward. But he promptly shifted onto the only terrain that seemed to justify our meeting. He said that he was glad to see me. All he could talk about with his friends was soccer and exam subjects. He praised me. Professor Galliani perceived it, he said. You're the only girl in the school who has any curiosity about things that aren't useful for exams and grades. He started to speak about serious subjects. We resorted immediately to a fine, impassioned Italian in which we knew we excelled. He started off with the problem of violence. He mentioned a peace demonstration in Cortona and related it skillfully to the beatings that had taken place in a piazza in Turin. He said he wanted to understand more about the link between immigration and industry. I agreed. But what did I know about those things? Nothing. Nino realized it, and he told me in great detail about an uprising of young Southerners and the harshness with which the police had repressed them. They call them Napoli. They call them Moroccans. They call them fascists, provocateurs, anarcho-syndicalists. But really, they are boys whom no institution cares about, so neglected that when they get angry, they destroy everything. Searching for something to say that would please him, I ventured. If you don't have a solid knowledge of the problems, and if you don't find lasting solutions, then naturally violence breaks out. But the people who rebel aren't to blame. It's the ones who don't know how to govern. He gave me an admiring look and said, "That's exactly what I think." I was really pleased. I felt encouraged and cautiously went on to some reflections on how to reconcile individuality and universality, drawing on Rousseau and other memories of the readings imposed by Professor Galliani. Then I asked, "Have you read Federico Chabod?" I mentioned that name because he was the author of the book on the idea of nationhood that I had read a few pages of. I didn't know anything else, but at school I had learned to give the impression that I knew a lot. "Have you read Federico Chabod?" It was the only moment when Nino seemed to be annoyed. I realized that he didn't know who Chabod was, and from that I got an electrifying sensation of fullness. I began to summarize the little I had learned, but I quickly realized that to know, to compulsively display what he knew, was his point of strength and at the same time his weakness. He felt strong if he took the lead and weak if he lacked words. He darkened. In fact, he stopped me almost immediately. He sidetracked the conversation. He started talking about the regions, about how urgent it was to get them approved, about autonomy and decentralization, about economic planning on a regional basis, all things I had never heard a word about. "No Chabod, then." I left him the field. And I liked to hear him talk, read the passion in his face. His eyes brightened when he was excited. We went on like that for at least an hour. Isolated from the shouting around us, its coarse dialect, we felt exclusive. He and I alone, with our vigilant Italian, with those conversations that mattered to us and no one else. What were we doing? A discussion? Practicing for future confrontations with people who had learned to use words as we had? An exchange of signals to prove to ourselves that such words were the basis of a long and fruitful friendship? A cultivated screen for sexual desire? I don't know. I certainly had no particular passion for those subjects, for the real things and people they referred to. I had no training, no habit, only the usual desire not to make a bad showing. It was wonderful, though, that is certain. I felt the way I did at the end of the year when I saw the list of my grades and read, "Passed." But I also understood that there was no comparison with the exchanges I had had with Leela years earlier, which ignited my brain, and in the course of which we tore the words from each other's mouth, creating an excitement that seemed like a storm of electrical charges. With Nino, it was different. I felt that I had to pay attention to say what he wanted me to say, hiding from him both my ignorance and the few things that I knew and he didn't. I did this and felt proud that he was trusting me with his convictions. But now something else happened. Suddenly he said, "That's enough," grabbed my hand, exclaimed, like a fluorescent caption, "Now I'll take you to see a landscape that you'll never forget," and dragged me to Piazza del Soccorso without letting go. Rather, he entwined his fingers in mine, so that, overwhelmed as I was by his clasp, I preserve no memory of the arc of the deep blue sea. It truly overwhelmed me. Once or twice he disentangled his fingers to smooth his hair, but he immediately took my hand again. I wondered for a moment how he reconciled that intimate gesture with his bond with Professor Galliani's daughter. "Maybe for him," I answered, "it's merely how he thinks of the friendship between male and female." But the kiss on Vio Mezzocanone? That, too, was nothing. New customs, new habits of youth, and anyway, so slight, just the briefest contact. I should be satisfied with the happiness of right now, the chance of this vacation that I wanted. Later I'll lose him. He'll leave. He has a destiny that can in no way be mine, too. I was absorbed by these throbbing thoughts when I heard a roar behind me and noisy cries of my name. Reno and Stefano passed us at full speed on their Lambrettas, with their wives behind. They slowed down, turned back with a skillful maneuver. I let go of Nino's hand. "And your friend?" Stefano asked, revving his engine. "He'll be here soon. Say hello from me." "Yes." Reno asked, "Do you want to take Lenuta for a spin?" "No, thanks." "Come on. You see she'd like to." Nino flushed. He said, "I don't know how to ride a Lambretta." "It's easy, like a bicycle." "I know, but it's not for me." Stefano laughed. "Reno, he's a guy who studies. Forget it." I had never seen him so lighthearted. Leela sat close against him, with both arms around his waist. She urged him, "Let's go. If you don't hurry, you'll miss the boat." "Yes, let's go," cried Stefano. "Tomorrow we have to work, not like you people who sit in the sun and go swimming. Bye, Lenu. Bye, Nino. Be good boys and girls." "Nice to meet you," Reno said cordially. They went off. Leela waved goodbye to Nino, shouting, "Please, take her home." "She's acting like my mother," I thought with a little annoyance. "She's playing grown-up." Nino took me by the hand again and said, "Reno is nice, but why did Lena marry that moron?" 46. A little later, I also met his friend, Bruno Socavo, who was around 20 and very short, with a low forehead, black curly hair, a pleasant face, but scarred by what must have been severe acne. They walked me home, beside the wine-colored sea of twilight. Nino didn't take my hand again, even though Bruno left us practically alone. He went in front or lingered behind, as if he didn't want to disturb us. Since Socavo never said a word to me, I didn't speak to him either. His shyness made me shy. But when we parted at the house, it was he who asked suddenly, "Will we meet tomorrow?" And Nino found out where we were going to the beach. He insisted on precise directions. I gave them. "Are you going in the morning or the afternoon?" "Morning and afternoon. Lena is supposed to swim a lot." He promised they would come and see us. I ran happily up the stairs of the house, but as soon as I came in, Pinucha began to tease me.
Mama, she said to Nunzia during dinner, Lenucha's going out with the poet's son, a skinny fellow with long hair who thinks he's better than everybody.
It's not true.
It's very true. We saw you holding hands.
Nunzia didn't understand the teasing and took the thing with the earnest gravity that characterized her.
What does Saratore-san do?
University student.
Then if you love each other, you'll have to wait.
There's nothing to wait for, Signora Nunzia. We're only friends.
But if, let's say, you should happen to become engaged, he'll have to finish his studies first. Then he'll have to find a job that's worthy of him, and only when he's found something will you be able to get married.
Here, Leela interrupted, amused. She's telling you you'll get moldy. But Nunzia reproached her.
You mustn't speak like that to Lenucha.
And to console me, she said that she had married Fernando at 21, that she had had Reno at 23. Then she turned to her daughter and said, without malice, only to point out how things stood,
you, on the other hand, were married too young.
That comment infuriated Leela, and she went to her room. When Pinucha knocked on the door to go in to sleep, she yelled not to bother her. You have your room. How, in that atmosphere, could I say, Nino and Bruno promise they'll come and see me on the beach? I gave it up. If it happens, I thought, fine. And if it doesn't, why tell them? Nunzia, meanwhile, patiently invited her daughter-in-law into her bed, telling her not to be upset by her daughter's nerves. The night wasn't enough to soothe Leela. On Monday, she got up in a worse mood than when she had gone to bed.
It's the absence of her husband, Nunzia said apologetically.
But neither Pinucha nor I believed it. I soon discovered that she was angry mainly at me. On the road to the beach, she made me carry her bag. And once we were at the beach, she sent me back twice. First, to get her a scarf. Then, because she needed some nail scissors. When I gave signs of protest, she nearly reminded me of the money she was giving me. She stopped in time, but not so that I didn't understand. It was like when someone is about to hit you and then doesn't. It was a very hot day. We stayed in the water. Leela practiced hard to keep afloat and made me stand next to her so that I could hold her up if necessary. Yet her spitefulness continued. She kept reproaching me. She said that it was stupid to trust me. I didn't even know how to swim. How could I teach her? She missed Saratore's talents as an instructor. She made me swear that the next day we would go back to the Maronti. Still, by trial and error, she made a lot of progress. She learned every movement instantly. Thanks to that ability, she had learned to make shoes, to dexterously slice salami and provolone, to cheat on the weight. She was born like that. She could have learned the art of engraving merely by studying the gestures of a goldsmith, and then been able to work the gold better than he. Already she had stopped gasping for breath and was forcing composure on every motion. It was as if she were drawing her body on the transparent surface of the sea. Long, slender arms and legs hit the water in a tranquil rhythm, without raising foam like Nino, without the ostentatious tension of Saratore the father.
Is this right?
Yes. It was true. In a few hours, she could swim better than I could, not to mention Pinucha, and already she was making fun of our clumsiness. That bullying air dissipated abruptly when, around 4 in the afternoon, Nino, who was very tall, and Bruno, who came up to his shoulders, appeared on the beach, just as a cool wind rose, taking away the desire to swim. Pinucha was the first to make them out as they advanced along the shore, among the children playing with shovels and pails. She burst out laughing in surprise and said, "Look who's coming, the long and the short of it." Nino and his friend, towels over their shoulder, cigarettes and lighters, advanced deliberately, looking for us among the bathers. I had a sudden sense of power. I shouted. I waved to signal our presence. So Nino had kept his promise. So he had felt, already, the next day, the need to see me again. So he had come purposely from Forio, dragging along his mute companion. And since he had nothing in common with Leela and Pinucha, it was obvious that he had taken that walk just for me, who alone was not married or even engaged. I felt happy, and the more my happiness seemed justified, Nino spread his towel next to me. He sat down. He pointed to an edge of the blue fabric, and I, who was the only one sitting on the sand, quickly moved over. The more cordial and talkative I became. Leela and Pinucha, instead, were silent. They stopped teasing me. They stopped squabbling with each other. They listened to Nino as he told funny stories about how he and his friend had organized their life of study. It was a while before Pinucha ventured a few words, in a mixture of dialect and Italian. She said the water was nice and warm, that the man who sold fresh coconut hadn't come by yet, that she had a great desire for some. But Nino paid little attention, absorbed in his witty stories, and it was Bruno, more attentive, who felt it his duty not to ignore what a pregnant woman was saying. Worried that the child might be born with a craving for coconut, he offered to go in search of some. Pinucha liked his voice, choked by shyness, but kind, the voice of a person who doesn't want to hurt anyone. And she eagerly began chatting with him, in a low voice, as if not to disturb. Leela, however, remained silent. She took little interest in the platitudes that Pinucha and Bruno were exchanging, but she didn't miss a word of what Nino and I were saying. That attention made me uneasy, and a few times I said I would be glad to take a walk to the fumaroles, hoping that Nino would say, "Let's go." But he had just begun to talk about the construction chaos on Ischia, so he agreed mechanically, then continued talking anyway. He dragged Bruno into it, maybe upset by the fact that he was talking to Pinucha, and called on him as a witness to certain eyesores right next to his parents' house. Nino had a great need to express himself, to summarize his reading, to give shape to what he had himself observed. It was his way of putting his thoughts in order. Talk, talk, talk. But certainly, I thought, also a sign of solitude. I proudly felt that I was like him, with the same desire to give myself an educated identity, to impose it, to say, "Here's what I know. Here's what I'm going to be." But Nino didn't leave me space to do it, even if occasionally I have to say I tried. I sat and listened to him, like the others, and when Pinucha and Bruno exclaimed, "All right, we're going for a walk now. We're going to look for coconut," I gazed insistently at Leela, hoping that she would go with her sister-in-law, leaving me and Nino finally alone to face each other, side by side, on the same towel. But she didn't breathe. And when Peanut realized that she was compelled to go for a walk by herself with a young man who was polite but nevertheless unknown, she asked me, in annoyance, "Lenu, come on, don't you want to walk?" I answered, "Yes, but let us finish our conversation, then maybe we'll join you." And she, displeased, went with Bruno toward the fumaroles. They were exactly the same height. We continued to talk about how Naples and Ischia and all Campania had ended up in the hands of the worst people, who acted like the best people. Marauders, Nino called them, his voice rising. Destroyers, bloodsuckers, people who steal suitcases of money and don't pay taxes. Builders, lawyers for builders, Camorrists, monarcho-fascists, and Christian Democrats, who behave as if cement were mixed in heaven, and God himself, with an enormous trowel, were throwing blocks of it on the hills, on the coasts.
But that the three of us were talking is an exaggeration. It was mainly he who talked. Every so often I threw in some fact I had read in Cronache Meridionale. As for Leela, she spoke only once, and cautiously, when in the list of villains he included shopkeepers. She asked, "Who are shopkeepers?" Nino stopped in the middle of a sentence, looked at her in astonishment. "Tradesmen."
"And why do you call them shopkeepers?"
"That's what they're called."
"My husband is a shopkeeper."
"I didn't mean to offend you."
"I'm not offended."
"Do you pay taxes?"
"I've never heard of them till now."
"Really?"
"Yes."
"Taxes are important for planning the economic life of a community."
"If you say so. You remember Pasquale Peluso?"
"No."
"He's a construction worker. Without all that cement, he would lose his job."
"Ah."
"But he's a communist. His father, also a communist, in the court's opinion, murdered my father-in-law, who had made money on the black market and is a loan shark. And Pasquale is like his father. He has never agreed on the question of peace, not even with the communists, his comrades. But even though my husband's money comes directly from my father-in-law's money, Pasquale and I are close friends."
"I don't understand what you're getting at."
Leela made a self-mocking face. "I don't either. I was hoping to understand by listening to the two of you." That was it.
She said nothing else.
But in speaking, she hadn't used her normal aggressive tone of voice. She seriously seemed to want us to help her understand, since the life of the neighborhood was a tangled skein. She had spoken in dialect most of the time, as if to indicate, modestly, "I don't use tricks. I speak as I am." And she had summarized disparate things frankly, without seeking, as she usually did, a thread that would hold them together. And in fact, neither she nor I had ever heard that word formula, loaded with cultural and political contempt, shopkeepers. And in fact, neither she nor I knew anything about taxes. Our parents, friends, boyfriends, husbands, relatives, acted as if they didn't exist. And school taught nothing that had to do even vaguely with politics. Yet Leela still managed to disrupt what had, until that moment, been a new and thrilling afternoon. Right after that exchange, Nino tried to return to his subject, but he faltered. He went back to telling funny anecdotes about life with Bruno. He said they ate only fried eggs and salami. He said that they drank a lot of wine. Then he seemed embarrassed by his own stories and appeared relieved when Pinuccia and Bruno, their hair wet, came back, eating coconut. "That was really fun," Pina exclaimed, but with the air of one who wants to say, "You two bitches, you sent me off by myself with someone I don't even know." When the two boys left, I walked with them a little way, just to make it clear that they were my friends and had come because of me. Nino said moodily, "Leela really got lost. What a shame." I nodded yes, said goodbye, stood for a while with my feet in the water to calm myself. When we got home, Pinuccia and I were lively, Leela thoughtful. Pinuccia told Nunzia about the visit of the two boys, and appeared unexpectedly pleased with Bruno, who had taken the trouble to make sure that her child wasn't born with a craving for coconut. "He's well brought up," she said. "A student, but not too boring. He seems not to care about how he's dressed, but everything he has on, from his bathing suit to his shirt and his sandals, is expensive."